Okay, good afternoon. Thanks very much for coming to this session. I know it's just after lunch, so I'll try and keep you awake at least for a little bit. This session is on claims-based identity, the new identity model, and therefore the new security, i.e., authentication and authorization model in SharePoint 2010. This is quite a large topic area. This presentation is an attempt to consolidate many different things into one hour-long presentation and cover them briefly. We can't really dive into any depth on each particular ones, each particular scenario. The one I will spend a bit more time on than perhaps others is forms-based authentication, which may be the most immediate impact if you're moving from 2007 to 2010. Before we get started, these are my contact details. The rest of it's a load of rubbish. Basically, my expertise in the realm of security stretches from sort of pre-SharePoint, but today I'm the security instructor for the Certified Master Program. So that's one of the sort of credentials here in terms of my expertise in the area of claims. So what we'll cover in the next hour or so is a brief overview of the benefits of claims, i.e. the rationale why the SharePoint product group decided to piggyback off this approach to security, and the sorts of scenarios that it enables or indeed improves over the previous releases. We'll then take a brief few moments to get a primer on what we mean by claims identity, what are the major components of a claims identity system. And then we'll spend a fair amount of time looking at the process of signing in users, so authenticating users to services, and how we go about administering claims-based authentication, how we go about upgrading from an existing forms-based authentication system in SharePoint to the new claims model. We'll talk a bit about authentication providers, claims providers, and the implementation specifics from more of a development perspective. And then we'll also talk about how we connect different or disparate systems together using this capability, in particular focusing on a simple scenario around a virtual list and then focusing on the other end of the scale, which is connecting an on-premise deployment of SharePoint 2010 to a cloud deployment of SharePoint 2010, or SharePoint Online, I'm supposed to call it. So in terms of the key benefits of claims-based identity, the real major one is that by building on this foundation or this infrastructure, we can support all of the existing identity infrastructure that's going to be in organizations. It's all very well to say the world should be using SAML tokens and authentication should be easy, but every company of any real size already has a significant investment in an existing identity infrastructure. That might be Active Directory, it might be some other third-party LDAP system, it could be SQL Server, and so on and so on. There's, you know, literally hundreds of these things out there in the marketplace. And that it's also true that companies have already faced challenges similar to those met by claims-based identity. So many companies are doing federated deployments today whereby two companies can collaborate on the same SharePoint deployment, but their user accounts are in the two different domains of the two different companies, a classic federation scenario. And there's also another very common deployment, specifically in sort of partner-type scenarios, using a thing called web single sign-on, which is a bit of a misnomer because there is no single sign-on. All of these things are credential caches. But the idea here is you could have, you know, 16 different systems in your company and you wish to expose those externally over the extranet using different authentication stores or identity stores. So all of these things are in play at the moment. You've likely got some of these in your companies as it stands today. And so claims-based identity needs to be able to provide support for all of these things natively and in terms of interacting with them. And we'll see a little later on in the presentation an example of how the Windows claims-based infrastructure can combine these different identities into a single claims token. The other key benefit, which is driving probably most of the SharePoint internal investment in this area, i.e. the development of the service applications architecture and so on, is the ability to enable automatic and secure identity delegation. And what we mean here is if we have an RSS viewer web part today in one web application, which is consuming a feed from another web application across different application pools, that web part won't work because we're assuming that both web applications are using Windows authentication, because the web part cannot do a double hop to the other system. Even if it's on the same machine, the principle is the same. It's going across a process boundary, and it's not possible to pass a Windows credential, a domain credential, across a process or machine boundary without using a thing called Kerberos. And Kerberos is seen to be difficult to deploy. It isn't really, but that's the reputation it has. It seemed to be scary. And fundamentally, it requires somebody who owns Active Directory in the organization has to do some work. They have to do some changes there. It's not something that the system can automatically light up. So the ability to do that type of identity delegation without requiring any additional work on the side of IT for many different, you know, that's a very simple scenario. Excel services is the other end of the scale there in terms of complexity. We can also enable a scenario used predominantly by business connectivity services that allows us to connect to external web services effectively without any credential going over the wire. The claims are going over the wire. There's no credentials over the wire. And it's open and open from a development perspective as well. And having a single API to program against across all these different areas is obviously a huge benefit to the developers of SharePoint, but to ISVs as well, building on top of it, and custom development, in addition to your out-of-the-box deployment. So being able to deal with identity the same way wherever you are, doing whatever activity you need across the stack is a key benefit here. Okay, so before we dive into how things work in SharePoint 2010, I'm just going to do a brief primer on what claims-based identity is all about. How many people here have investigated or deployed a thing called Active Directory Federation Services? Okay, about 20% of you, good. So that's a early implementation, Microsoft's second implementation of open standards claims-based identity. And it defines all of the concepts that we're going to talk about today and all of the key components in SharePoint 2010. The first one is the concept of an identity. And in a claims world, this is a set of attributes that describe a user. And it says a user there, but we could be talking about a computer or a printer or anything, any principle. User's obviously the one we're most interested in. And this could be their name, their email address, their age, their membership number to a club, that kind of thing. But the identity is also the membership of groups for that individual or principal. And the claim is an authority that claims to have the attribute, i.e. the name, and the value, in my case, Spencer. So the user identity then becomes a set of claims or a collection of claims. And we don't say attribute like we would for an Active Directory attribute, email address, and so on, because I may have claims from different systems. So the example here is MySpace and the DVLA. DVLA is, in the UK, the organization responsible for issuing driving licenses. And so on both of those systems, I have an age attribute. But it's entirely feasible that on MySpace, I'm saying I'm 18, right? And I've got a picture from when I was at school. But, you know, the real truth, unfortunately, is that I'm 36. So in order to make a decision on, you know, which one's right, effectively, the application needs to trust, based on the context, which claim you are going to trust as authoritative. And so that trust is not just a technical thing, like it is with Active Directory. It's a yes or no. Your password's correct or not. The value is you've only got one option for the value of the attribute. It's really a scenario-driven determination. Depending on what you're doing within an application, you may choose to trust MySpace over the DVLA. ADFS version 1, the Active Directory Federation Services V1 product, was Microsoft's first attempt at something in this space in terms of a product. And that was the key driver for the initial work done in SharePoint and other systems in Microsoft around claims-based identity. And the idea here is simply to allow external domain accounts from another organization access into your resources using the principle of authentication federation. So whilst it was the original driver, we can do much more with claims-based identity than just federation. So over time, as this was worked on and as the product ADFS, the Geneva stack within Microsoft, was being developed, it turned out that there was much more wide-scale use for these technologies. The Geneva framework capability all originates with a product called Zoomit Via, which was acquired by Microsoft in about 2000. And that then became a thing called Meta Directory Services, and it changed its name 3 or 4 times, and it's now called ADFS V2, or Geneva, as the code name for that. So by factoring out our identity provider infrastructure from the application has obvious benefits. So instead of having a different security or authorization plumbing for each individual application or service, obviously makes life a lot easier, not just for the companies that produce these products, but ourselves as third parties adding solutions on top. So SharePoint, like many other future products from Microsoft, will become identity provider neutral. So if in the future there is a new identity provider from the vendor, it can simply just be, this one can be taken out and be replaced with the new versions. One key thing to be aware of, and this is really more geared towards administrators or IT pros, is that we have a thing called the security token service within any claims-based system. And that's true for SharePoint as well, obviously. And the security token service is a web service that issues security tokens which include the claims of the user or the caller, but that is predominantly a user. And the STS can support multiple authentication types, so in SharePoint that's the usual suspects, Active Directory, LDAP, SQL, and so on. And this also allows us to implement federation, because there will be a security token service at both ends of the wire, as it were, for federation. It also is the element that's responsible for providing identity delegation, so the RSS viewer web part example again there. We can also do a thing called claims transformation or identity normalization, so that the relevant claims are available to features at the right time. And so an example here would be, you may wish to SharePoint has a capability called audiences, which in the past, people like me had to tell customers was not a security control. It was a content personalization or contents filtering type capability. Audiences could now be considered a security control in some respects, because you could enable those as claims, and then they would be presented to, you know, a web application as an example service, and dependent on those attributes or claims, you know, do display decisions on the page. So this is a funny little diagram. Basically, every time a user goes to a web page in SharePoint on the first time of a session, or indeed the service is authenticated, the client is going to call into this security token service. That guy is going to speak to an attribute store, an account store, so the authentication directory. It can be whatever you want, effectively, as long as it supports the open standards that claims-based auth uses. More on that in a little bit. It's going to validate those credentials, and return a token, security token, to the client. And that client token will then be used elsewhere in the system to generate a response back to the client. So this security token service lives in every single SharePoint deployment. It's there. But after you've run the SharePoint configuration wizard, there will be in the SharePoint Web Services website in IIS, there'll be an STS application. It won't be configured yet, but it's sitting there waiting to be configured. And then when you run the farm configuration wizard, if you choose that option, or you configure the STS manually, that will be then provided with an application pool. And usually, this guy will run as the SharePoint farm account. This is one of the core farm components, if you like. Now, you don't have to do anything unless you want to do some wacky deployment and change settings. This will all be done and set up for you automatically. And it's just a web service, effectively, a WCF web service. So the security token service is responsible for issuing tokens. We then need something that's going to do something with that token, and that's called a relying party, which is an application that relies on claims. And we have two types of application here. We have a claims-aware application. What that means is it's an application that can do something with claims if they're present. It might not require them. It can just make use of them if they're there. And then we have a claims-based application, which requires them. And if there isn't a token presented by the STS, it will fail. So we can build these ourselves using either approach, and indeed SharePoint Server 2010 uses both approaches in its own implementation. Behind the scenes, our service applications are all claims-based applications, i.e. they will not work without this infrastructure in place. SharePoint 2010 would not function without this infrastructure. Whereas a content web application, i.e. the web application that your end users are going to be accessing, may be claims-aware or it may be claims-based. So that's a primer of the key components. That's actually very condensed. There is more to this, but again, we could have five different sessions on each area and still be here confused. So sign-in is the next area, and we've got some scenarios here that I'm going to try and walk through. The first one is to sign into SharePoint using both Windows accounts and accounts from somewhere else. And the example here is accounts stored in an LDAP directory. That could just as easily be a SQL Server credential store. So you want to be able to configure easily both intranet and extranet users for collaboration. So you can use the people picker to see both sets of users, to be able to set this up in a way that doesn't require expensive load balancers or other additional implementation. Also look at how to integrate with somebody else's identity store, so the classic federation scenario. And the next one, or the last one on here, was probably the biggest complaint about authentication in SharePoint 2007 is that annoying pop-up you get every time you try and open an Office file from an FBA site over the internet or even just internally. And you get that prompt three times, you hit cancel three times, and the document magically opens. What's that all about? It's very annoying. Oh, well, maybe 50% of the time the document opens. So these are four key scenarios, kind of high-level scenarios that we'll walk through. Before we do that, we need to think about how the identity is handled and then exposed within the SharePoint ecosystem. We have two modes of authentication in SharePoint, and this is kind of marketing terminology. They needed to come up with a way to figure out how to delineate between claims and normal authentication, if you like. So the first mode is classic authentication, and this is basically how it works today with SharePoint 2007. So we have a Windows identity, which is represented by an NT token. And there is really no change there from a high-level perspective in how this works. Then we have the more interesting claims authentication model. And we can still use our Windows identity as before, or we could use, you know, a custom FBA store LDAP SQL server. I'm not quite sure what SAL means. I need to change that. There's any number of these third-party authentication stores. And those are then transformed by the system into a SAML token. So this is an open standard representation of a claims-based identity. And then that SAML token is then exposed to us as developers within the system as an SP user. We can also authenticate using SAML as well. So this would be ADFS or LiveID or OpenID, etc. Anybody that implements SAML 1.1 or above, this can be treated in the same way. So SharePoint or the claims infrastructure and SharePoint normalize all of these different types of identities into the SP user. So as we're building even something as simple as a custom web part and we want to make authorization decisions there, we're going to be doing it against the SP user regardless of the type of authentication used. So that's a big change from 2007. So how do we sign in? We have our identity provider, which I kind of showed you previously with the STS animation. And then we have our SharePoint farm over on the right-hand side with its STS, and we've got our user there in the middle. So the user's going to request the resource. It's going to authenticate that request using whichever identity provider is implemented. It's going to return the token, and the token request is then sent to the STS. It's returned, so we've now been validated by the identity provider and the STS, and then the resource is requested with the token. So at this stage, it's very similar to the way, at least in principle, something like NTLM or Kerberos will work. The first time the page is requested, it's requested as anonymous. And the web server turns around and says, "You're anonymous. I don't know who you are. Give me a token, and then I'll reattempt the authentication." So similar principle there. So the claims providers is what we're interested in from a custom development perspective. We can use these to add application-specific claims onto the ones that are already available by the method of authentication. And so there's many, many examples here. You could be looking these things up in an external system and augmenting the existing claims. And then SharePoint can make authorization decisions based on those if you choose to do it that way. An example here, or a simple example here, is you could have within the new My Sites capability of SharePoint 2010, you could choose which posts to display from which users based on some claims, such as, you know, I'm in this group of individuals or I'm over a certain age. So you can do that kind of content authorization filtering. We can also, in the identity provider, implement methods that allow us to search and resolve claims and then present them back to the consuming application. Here's an example of the new claims picker, and we've implemented, on this demo machine, we've implemented two different types of authentication. This is one of the scenarios from the previous slide. And you can see here that we have combined, hopefully you can see that at the back, we've combined our Active Directory accounts, of which we have 200, and then we have forms auth. We don't actually have any users in there. But you can see that we can combine both stores of user, and we can have many more here for different authentication or credential stores, and they'll all show up in the same picker. this pick has actually been sort of tweaked a little bit from a user interface perspective since I did this screenshot. But the, you know, it's effectively the same functionality. This is the replacement for that annoying pop-up dialog box you get when you try and open a Office file using forms-based authentication. So this capability, I'll come on to where you can get this, but basically instead of that standard Windows logon prompt, we've now, the client is smart enough to understand that this resource is coming from an FBA source, and we're presented with a sign-in box. And if we hit the close button here 3 times, it won't let us get the document. Right? We need to authenticate to get the document. So it works properly now, is basically the upshot here. And again, you can expect the user interface may be slightly tweaked and slightly more professional, let's say. So this works with any non-Windows authentication mechanism. And it works with Office 2010 on XP and above. You can see the browser requirements there. But it's also been backported to Service Pack 2 for Office 2007. So it doesn't require Office 2010. You can get the same experience with Office 2007. The real thing to call out here, really, is it requires IE8 or above. So if you're going to ask me, does it work on a Macintosh? The answer is no, it doesn't work on Macintosh because there is no IE8 for Macintosh. You can expect the same capability is likely to be backported into a future release or service release of Office for Mac. But there's also nothing to do with claims, there's a SharePoint integration pack for Office for the Mac which improves the experience as well. So if you're still on IE6, it's not going to help. So I've mentioned this already. We have these two authentication modes, classic and claims. Now, in SharePoint 2007, we could build an authentication provider for SharePoint. You could plug it in, fiddle around with the web config, set up the stores and so on, and you could do pretty much whatever you wanted. But that was just piggybacking off the ASP.NET membership and a role of authentication provider capability. Within SharePoint 2010, things have changed significantly. There are no other authentication providers. You are either in classic mode, which is basically Windows authentication, or you're in claims mode. And if you want to do your a custom provider, you need to build a claims provider, which is going to sit on top of the claims authentication provider in the box. So big change there. In the beta 2, this is kind of a dubious slide because beta 2 is not really supported anyway, and you're not allowed to go live on it, and you won't be allowed to upgrade it to RTM. But anyway, the ones that are supported in inverted commas are the Windows Classic, obviously, our FBA claims, anonymous access, and then FBA plus anonymous. So the two key scenarios, the intranet scenario and the external or partner FBA style deployment, and obviously anonymous for an internet-facing website. And it says here on the slide, not ready for deployment at beta 2 is kind of a hedge bet. The others, they're all there and they all work, but the intention is, since the beta was released back in October last year or whenever it was that customers would be, you know, testing this out and would be getting feedback on that and making improvements and so on. But they all work, so if you're looking to do proof of concepts and so on, it's the entire functionality is there. Okay, in terms of administration, there's really not much to this. This is the managed web application screen in central administration. It's a list of web applications. I'm going to go in and edit the properties of this application, and you can see straight away, this also shows up if we're creating a new one. Excuse me. We have the mode selection at the top there. We're either in claims-based authentication or classic mode. And the default is not that. The default is classic mode. Okay, so the default is not going to break anything straight away. It's going to operate in classic mode. So the first thing we would do if we had an existing app here, which is SharePoint 7355, is we'd set claims mode, claims-based authentication, and that would actually change what's shown further down in this screen, which is this, the identity provider's selection area. And we can then choose to enable Windows authentication, and that will give us a drop-down list box of the different types of Windows authentication. So there's three in the drop-down list. There'll be two in RTM, Kerberos or NTLM, or just NTLM, which is very similar to what we have today. And then we can enable basic authentication for this as well, which is also a new option in this screen that wasn't present before. And we can enable ASP.NET membership provider and role provider, and we'll put the provider names into those two text boxes as we would previously. And then, in addition, we can specify a federated identity provider, and the list of the ones that are installed will show up in the list here. And we've only got the two in this example. One is for the trusted identity provider, that's on every machine in the farm. And then we have Geneva, which is the code name for the ADFS V2 product. And don't get me started on why there's this big load of text on the left-hand side. In these screens, you should always immediately hit the maximize button, because otherwise you'd be scrolling forever. But a key takeaway here is I can select all three of these and enter the appropriate details, and then I'll have Windows Auth, FBA, and the federated identity provider support all present on a single application. And I haven't configured a zone here or anything like that. Okay, I've not got any alternate access mappings, etc. Which brings us on to mixed mode, multi-mode authentication. On the left-hand side, we have mixed mode, and this is very much what we have today in SharePoint 2007. If I want the same content internally and externally, but internally to use Windows authentication, externally to use FBA, I have to extend the web application to another zone. So I then have two web applications, one that uses Windows Auth, one that uses FBA. That means two URLs, two things that need configuration, two things that need monitoring, and so on and so forth. And we can still do that. That's still entirely supported. There's no real change there. But we can also do a thing called multi-authentication mode, which allows us to do the same scenario without extending the web app. So we can have multiple authentication mechanisms per application. And we can do a bit of a mix and match, which is the diagram on the right here, where we can do a combination of both modes effectively. In this example, you know, we have Windows Auth and FBA for the default zone. This is useful for scenarios where you want to allow. So a good example is me. I log onto the Microsoft network over with a smart card sometimes, but sometimes I want to be able to log into resources using username and password. And not all Microsoft systems allow me to log on that way, but if the security policy says it's okay, something like Outlook Web Access, for example, then I can do that using FBA, but it's still a domain credential. So you can get the same effect here with SharePoint. But then also for our partners on the extranet, we want to do that authentication using SAML tokens, because that's what that partner is going to present us with. So that's the second extended extranet application here. So in 2010, to enable forms-based authentication, you must be in claims mode. There's no sort of hack legacy support for doing it the same way as we do in 2007. So instead of having an ASP.NET generic identity to work within our code or custom solution, we now have a claims identity. And the security token service is going to then go out and call the provider to validate the credentials, issue the token. So if we have a custom membership provider, you obviously must implement validate user in that provider. And the roles, if you're doing roles with these guys, need to be converted to claims. So potentially, especially if you're an ISV and you ship a membership provider today for SharePoint, you're going to need to re-implement that and ensure that it's playing nicely in the claims mode, because we're not using the generic identity anymore. For the reason why this reason for this, and the reason primary reason why we can't do it the old-fashioned way anymore, is so that all these principles are then available within the different zones, which is the example on the previous slide, and in the people picker as another example. So that's all very nice, but how do we go about upgrading this? Well, we've got two, there's many approaches to upgrade, but the two that are relevant to authorization is in place and DB attach. So if we do an in place upgrade, the ACLs are going to be updated to reference the new claims, but the web configuration of the application is not going to be updated. So there's a manual required update there. And if we do a DB attach method, which I would recommend, generally speaking, then you don't need to update the configuration, obviously, because there is no configuration to update. And all of these things are provider neutral. We don't actually care whether the back end is SQL Server, LDAP, or something else. All we're doing is entering in the name of the role provider and the membership, the claims provider in the web config. If we're starting from scratch, might be a good idea to do this even if you are upgrading from 2007, may end up with a cleaner implementation. The first thing you need to do is set up the FBA claims, which is the screenshots that I've shown you. We're going to create an authentication provider or use the ones that come available with the product. We'll change the web app or create a new one. And then we'll add into the web config in a manner similar to how we do today, into three different web config files. And they're listed there: central admin, the actual application that you want end users to authenticate against, and the STS web service. So why do we need three of these? It's kind of bizarre in some respects. Well, we need it in central admin so that we can pick users or principals from either the system or the FBA membership store. And so we need to be able to set policies and other security controls within central administration. We need it in the security token service web service, otherwise we won't be able to authenticate any users. And this is the classic kind of exam question, if you like. You know, you've set up FBA, everything looks good, but nobody can authenticate. And it's usually because the STS web config hasn't been modified. And it's kind of, you can think about this in some respects as being the same as having to add the web config changes to the shared service provider admin website in 2007. And then, of course, we need it within the the web application that end users are going to use itself. We require two providers. One is the system provider, which will be automatically configured, and the important one is our custom provider needs to be referenced so that end users using the application and site collection admins can use the people picker as well. If you were at my earlier session today, I spent a little bit of time describing how the new services architecture is enabled by claims authentication. So where does SharePoint make use of this stuff without us doing anything? Even if we're just going to use Windows authentication, how does SharePoint make use of it? And there's some examples here. It basically is everywhere in SharePoint Foundation. just in terms of general security and website provisioning. But it's also used by search for security trimming. Security trimming is performed effectively on the web front end or by the query combination of the query and the web front end roles, and can be a very expensive operation and can lead to slow search results. By leveraging claims, we now do more interesting things with security trimming, and we can do it faster as well and in a more extensible fashion, so it can be customized more easily. The additional fast search functionality relies heavily on claims for its user interface and its management operations capability. Business connectivity services obviously is a key component that allows us to get data from external systems and surface it in SharePoint. This again is going to use claims-based identity to flow user credentials from SharePoint or from the end user's desktop all the way to the back-end system that BCS is accessing. Virtual lists is another example of something that wouldn't work without claims-based identity. Or sorry, would work in a very different way without it. Excel calculation services as well, very common to use this to provide the surfacing or dashboarding of data from a remote analysis services system or similar data aggregation capabilities. So there's just some examples there. There's many more, but the key point really is that anything that consumes data from an external connection or external service can leverage the claims identity because we've already got it. We don't have any more work to do. And we don't need to do work in our custom applications to enable delegation scenarios. A lot of code is out there that attempts to get information from other systems, and it can't really flow the user's credentials across the process boundary, so it basically, you know, goes into God mode and changes itself to be the farm account or the admin account of the machine to solve that problem. And, of course, that type of code is very dangerous, should never be deployed in production. But there's a lot of it out there because it's easy. It's the only easy way for the developer to get the required results. By using claims identity system, that problem can be avoided entirely. Okay. So we now move on to services, and this is a more sort of holistic view on how claims enables other scenarios. And so there's some examples here. The first one is to show the user's pay stub, pay information, from a line of business database without credentials. So this is the classic surfacing information from another system. Then the next example is a real-time order status information from a supplier. It's obviously that's external to the company, so it's either an extranet or internet link. And then there's also deploying farms for user identity delegation. This is the cross-company federations type scenario. So in terms of interoperating with services, this is a kind of architecture diagram that shows a simplified process flow. We have our Windows identity on the way in. That's obviously converted to claims within SharePoint and using the STS of we've already seen. There's a client proxy that's then going to pass that token over to the service application on the app server, which of course has its STS as well. And we have a thing called claims to the window token service, which can convert the claim to a Windows token effectively. And we have a secure store service, which is the replacement for the old SharePoint server single sign-on application. So this is a credential store for application use. And then we can obviously go ahead and use that identity to speak to, you know, the other system. Now, we're not using BCS in this example because BCS may not be available to the developer of this system for whatever reason. You'll note the important thing is probably the hardest to read. There's a trust between the STS here. It won't work without that. Here's a more simple example of how SharePoint can use a line of business system to populate effectively a thing called a virtual list, which is a new feature in SharePoint Foundation. This is using the BCS. And again, there's a trust between the SharePoint's STS and the external web service, which BCS is connecting to. So we can simply flow identity across there, and we'll get different views of the list based on who we are. A much more complex example here. This is now the cross-organizational trust. And this is effectively how you would connect disparate farms to one another and have their data integrated. And the example here is again the virtual list, because it's the simple way of showing this concept. But we have on the left-hand side, let's say that's our on-premise deployment of SharePoint, and on the right-hand side we have a cloud deployment. So this might be a hosted service from Microsoft or somebody else. And so there's a trust between the SharePoint STS and a thing called an enterprise STS, which is hosted inside the organization. And then that STS trusts over the internet the external hosting provider's STS and enables us to do effectively the same thing and connect and integrate between the two different systems. And there could be five systems on here, and there'd just be a, you know, an ongoing trust implementation. This is going to be interesting to see how many people deploy this immediately and how many people sort of wait 6 months and try it out, see how it's actually performing and so on. But the principle of the security of this is entirely sound. And this is effectively the implementation offered not just by SharePoint, but also by is augmented by future products. So ADFS version 2 is an enterprise STS, for example. So from a developer perspective, we want to do these kind of things. SharePoint is going to give us this token, and the identity is included in that token. We can optionally include other information about the farm, it says there. We're really talking about the principle, so that we can make decisions based on that information. In terms of how we call that remote web service, you know, we can use BCS, but we can still also use, you know, more traditional approaches here. We can use the sort of old way of doing things. So SOAP, ASMX web services fully support these standards. It's a little more work. WCF makes this a lot easier to produce the web service that will rely on these security tokens. And then within the web service at the other side, you're going to use the claims to make the authorization decision in the same way you would do so today. So the standards that this is all built on, this is kind of the good news, because if this wasn't standards-based, it wouldn't be much use, because it would be a SharePoint-only conversation, is WS Federation. This is the architecture between trust mechanisms that I showed you on the previous diagram. WS Trust 1.4, this is the security token infrastructure. And then the SAML token is the dialect, or the XML format of describing the claims in a way that different system vendors can make use of. And if we flip back a few slides to this guy, all of these first four respect that vocabulary, that SAML token vocabulary. So obviously SAML OpenAuth is based on the system. Oracle, all of the companies that Oracle acquired that are now called Oracle something or other, they support it. through SAML tokens. SAP fully supports this. So those are the three most common integration points from a services perspective. We also have Kerberos can be used in conjunction with this as well. Obviously, a custom legacy database is a whole other story. You can easily build a wrapper on top of that, but that requires deployment at the remote service. Okay, so really to wrap up, there's a new form of identity within SharePoint, and it's persuasive across the product, both in terms of how you deal with end-user authentication, also how SharePoint works behind the scenes, and in terms of enabling other SharePoint functionality that wasn't as easily possible before. It's also going to open up SharePoint to a much more flexible approach for content aggregation and various other scenarios that rely on this open standards approach to authorization. And we get a big payoff, kind of a side benefit, but a big payoff of, you know, the Office client applications working in forms-based or non-Windows, predominantly forms-based authentication scenarios. Another key point really here around what Claims is providing for us is as Microsoft improve the Claims infrastructure, SharePoint will continue to leverage that and build on top of that. One common question is, well, this is all very nice, does that mean I no longer need Kerberos? A classic question in this space. And the answer is, it depends. If you're just doing the RSS viewer web part, you don't need Kerberos anymore. You can continue to use, you can just use claims-based authentication, and that will work. But there's systems there that you require Kerberos for today which don't yet support claims-based identity. And the best example here is SQL Server Analysis Services providing information to an Excel viewer web part. And the scenario is, you're going to get a different information back from the cube in analysis services based on who you are as an end user. A sales report or something like that will be different based if you're the manager or the chief executive. Right, the chief executive's going to get green flashing lights. The sales manager's going to get loads of red things saying you need to do more work. So to do that, you will still need to implement Kerberos because SQL Server Analysis Services is not claims aware yet. So whilst Excel Services is claims aware, the end of the pipe, as it were, the last system in the chain, is not. So there's still going to be scenarios where you have to implement Kerberos. So claims-based identity doesn't mean Kerberos is dead. There's still some very good reasons to implement Kerberos for performance reasons, especially in large distributed enterprises. So hopefully this has been useful. It's really difficult to do an overview of everything about claims in an hour. And we've run a little short, a little early, but without doing a deep dive into each particular area, it's quite a challenge. So hopefully it's been useful. Fill in your evals, tell me if it hasn't been, and I'll change the presentation for next time. Happy to take questions if there are any in the remaining time we have. If you can use the mic for questions so that everybody else can hear, that'd be great.
I was wondering how Trust is implemented. Is it a certificate or something like that?
Yes, when you install SharePoint, there's a machine certificate automatically generated, and that's used to guarantee the integrity and confidentiality of the Trust communication.
Okay, but if I want to trust another installation of SharePoint,
How
do I implement that I trust that other guy?
So they will provide you with a public certificate, a public key. So it's effectively the same way you would do trust between two sites, in simple terms, yeah. Another question down front, yeah.
Sounds a little bit scary to get rid of Kerberos, rock-solid security protocol. How tamper-proof is it?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Kerberos has been around a long, long time, very well proven. Lots of companies require it. In terms of how well claims-based identity stacks up to that, very well in general terms. But of course, the proof is going to be over the long haul. Now, the communications is all encrypted. It's all, you know, standard SSL over-the-wire encryption. So in terms of interception, there's no real concern there. In terms of the tokens and their validity, the SAML specs, the SAML work that's been done is as secure as Kerberos in that respect. But of course, we don't have some of the capability of Kerberos, and we don't have some of the more esoteric configuration options in terms of strength and so on. But those are coming as people implement stuff on these standards. But it's fair to say that WS Star security is comparable in terms of platform security to Kerberos. But it hasn't been around for 15 years, so you know, you can't say it's better or as good with 100% confidence. That would be ludicrous. There's still some very good reasons to stay with Kerberos, but yet expose a claims identity. So the authentication is Kerberos, but then the way the system uses that identity for other things is claims. Very sensible approach. And we would expect many large organizations will do that. If they've already invested in Kerberos, then no reason to change.
I expected it just the other way around, to use claims-based identity to for the identification, but for the authorization, the Kerberos protocol on the background, but that's not the case.
It very much depends on what that back end is. Dependent on security policies or level of paranoia, you may choose to implement Kerberos for that back-end authorization. Yeah. So the Excel, the analysis services is a good example of that, because usually that data is sensitive, and you know, not the sort of stuff that you want to take any chances with. So you would set a policy based on either the paranoia level or the confidentiality requirements of the data at the back-end. You know, which level of authentication at that point, or sort of authorization at that point, you require. Yeah, that would be a fair approach.
Can you put the claims into the Windows card space so you can use it and present it with a logon screen?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so you can integrate SAML with CardSpace and have that experience, so they log on using CardSpace. I always start calling it the old name. So yes, it's very simple. That's actually not really a SharePoint thing. You know, that's something that would be done using the CardSpace tooling to integrate. There's actually an example of 2007 and CardSpace available, and I think you'd probably take the vast majority of that and port it over. But yeah, it's a standard SAML token, or SAML identity, sorry. Yep, just behind the previous gentleman.
Would you recommend classic mode or claims mode when you migrate the 2007 installation to 2010 and use only one authentication?
Classic mode, yeah. There's no reason for you immediately to change in an upgrade scenario to claims mode. Upgrading is a dangerous proposition. I don't really care what the salespeople say, right? Upgrading is dangerous because you've got a system, it's working, and your users are using it and they're happy with it, and you're making a big change to it by upgrading it. So the number of things that you can rule out of the equation that potentially cause problem, the more of those you can do, the better. So keeping it the same, at least initially, is the right approach, and that will be how it does it if you do an in-place anyway. It might be the case, though, that after a few months and you want to start making use of some of the additional functionality, that might drive you to implement claims. But the key thing to bear in mind is, as long as you're happy with Windows Auth for your end users, you can keep it as classic as long as you like, because behind the scenes, the SharePoint system's going to take that Windows Auth and convert it into a SAML token to use with access services, for example. But as far as your end users are concerned, as far as your IT admins are concerned and everything like that, it's still the same as it was before. If it works for you now, don't break it, right? Don't change it. One at the back, yeah? You can, yes. If you ping me after the session, I can drop you a link to an article that walks through the configuration of that. And that's using Geneva 2. It might not be the final release of that product, but yes, you can integrate them today. There's a fair bit of configuration, but it's not that complicated. I can't remember the URL. It's one of these horrible URLs with a GUID in it and stuff. Okay, well, if there's no more questions, feel free to leave. Don't let me hold you back. And thank you very much.